Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU of Wisconsin, and the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty filed a federal lawsuit yesterday charging that Wisconsin's voter ID law is unconstitutional and will deprive citizens of their basic right to vote. The legal director of the ACLU of Wisconsin said the state of Wisconsin has created a voter ID system that's making it very hard or impossible for residents to exercise their cherished right to vote. Countless Wisconsin residents, including veterans, minority workers, and seniors who have been voting for decades, will be turned away from the polls under this law's restrictive photo ID requirements. Our lawsuit aims to block this unconstitutional law so that Wisconsin can continue its proud tradition of high participation in elections. Joining us this hour to talk about this important issue is Karen Rotker, senior staff attorney at the ACLU of Wisconsin. Later in the hour, Donald Downs will be with us. He is a professor of political science, law, and journalism at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. We'll be welcoming phone calls. I anticipate that we'll have many of them this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Karen, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Tell me more about how it's going to be difficult, if not impossible, for some people in Wisconsin to vote. Who will have problems?
Okay, so let's step back a minute. We know, and I suspect we'll get calls saying, well, lots of people have driver's licenses and photo IDs. And that's true. And those people probably aren't going to have big problems voting. But there are many, many, many people in the state of Wisconsin who don't have those forms of identification. And those are the main forms we're talking about. There are a couple others that are valid. But let's talk about the state ID card. I think there's a perception, first of all, as I said, that everybody's got one of these few kinds of photo ID. We know that's not true. I think there's also a perception out there, well, if you want your photo ID, you just march into the DMV and the ID is free and you get it, and what's the big deal? So I'd like to talk for a minute about what the big deal is.
Okay.
To get, if you've never had a Wisconsin ID or Wisconsin driver's license before, and that's really the population we're primarily talking about, you need at least three documents to get the ID. For most people, that's going to be a birth certificate, certified birth certificate, a Social Security card, and documentary proof of a street mailing residence address. Now, let's step back another level. What if you don't have your birth certificate or your Social Security card? You need documents to get those documents. You can't just walk into the Department of Vital Statistics in Wisconsin or in most other states and say, okay, it's me, I want my birth certificate. In fact, one of the first things the birth certificate form for Wisconsin says is, we want to see a photo ID. Now, they give some alternative documents, but there actually are a number of states, and I believe also Puerto Rico, parenthetically, Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens at birth, so just to be clear about that, that actually do require photo ID. They say you must have a photo ID to get your birth certificate. But you need your birth certificate to get your photo ID. How's that going to work for folks? And the range of documents to provide is limited. And again, for many people, this is really a problem. What if you don't have a birth certificate? What if, like one of our lead plaintiffs, Ruth L. Franks, you were born with a midwife and never formally had a birth certificate issued? There are a lot of elderly people, including elderly people from the South in particular, who were born in like the 20s, 30s, 40s, for whom that's an issue. Or to correct the records to get the birth registered could be hundreds of dollars. So those people are all going to lack the documentation they need and have a hard time getting one form of documentation, birth certificate, ditto Social Security card. You need documents to get your Social Security card. And we have a number of clients who have, well, for example, one of our clients went to DMV and they said, you need a birth certificate and you need your Social Security card to get your photo ID. So she walked, because by definition these folks don't drive or they would have a license. She walked to Social Security and Social Security said, you need a photo ID to get your Social Security card. So it's at least people are being told that. And these are not lawyers. It's like the government is telling me I need a photo ID to get my Social Security card. DMV, the government is telling me I need a Social Security card to get my photo ID. Folks are going to be shut out of the voting process. Proof of residence. There's a somewhat restrictive list of documents. You must have the document has to have a street address. And in fact, the GAB's own chart talks about a street address because those IDs are going to get mailed. What if you're homeless? You're certainly allowed to vote under the Constitution, but you can't mail, use as a street address, you know, the park bench at whatever the street corner is. And even for people who are in shelters, you know, there may not be a way to verify that, or there may be a time lag if those IDs are being mailed. People who are couch surfing, you know, we know lots of people are living doubled and tripled up. What if those folks don't get bills in their name? Because the bill is in mom's name, not in grandma's name or in the young person's name or in the friend that they're staying with name. How are those folks going to prove a street residence mailing address? And so we are so we've got this layer. You need like tertiary documents to get the secondary documents to get the primary documents that you need in order to vote. That's a pretty big burden. And again, it's a pretty big burden on people who essentially by definition aren't going to have driver's licenses, which means are going to have a hard time getting to all the multiple places they need to get the documents to get the ID.
And the lead plaintiff that you mentioned, who we should say has been voting since 1948 and is a village trustee where she lives, could get a document, but it would cost somewhere around $200.
That's correct.
For her to secure this.
Yeah, she never had a she never had a regular birth certificate. Again, that was not uncommon at the time she was born. When they did some kind of a birth registration on her, there was an incorrect version of her maiden name. And so to correct that, which you would need the corrected document to get the ID document, would be, she has been told, in the range of $200. And she's not exempt. In fact, very few people are exempt from the law, including most, even most people who vote absentee are not exempt from this law. So the other group I just want to mention is, because you talked about the poll tax, people for whom, even if somehow they can overcome these practical and legal barriers to getting their documents, for whom the money, the $20, the $30, whatever it is for a birth certificate, really is an issue. Again, we've heard, and I expect people are going to call saying, what's the big deal? So I'd like to give you a little bit of data. There are close on 400,000 people over the age of 18 in the state of Wisconsin who have incomes below the federal poverty level. This is the American Community Survey, which is the sort of census-like estimates of data, okay? So actually, it's more than 400,000 people age 18 and older, most of them 18 to 64, who have incomes below the federal poverty level. Federal poverty level is a little under $11,000 a year for a single person, so under $1,000 a month, okay? There are about 180,000 Wisconsin residents age 18 and older who have incomes less than 50% of the federal poverty level. So again, we're talking less than $500 a month, close on 180,000 people in this state. Now, do some of those folks have IDs or birth certificates? I'm sure some of them do, but I'm sure a lot of them don't either. And when you are saying to these people where a $20 might be their bus pass for the week, might be medicine for a week or two or a month, might be, you know, food or household necessities like toilet paper or other things like that, it is a big deal. And it is, for those people in that sense, a poll tax. We also suspect that there are people in more rural parts of Wisconsin where it's not just the cost of the birth certificate, but again, if by definition you've got people who aren't drivers, the costs of getting to a DMV office, do you have to pay somebody's gas? Do you have
to
pay?
Take a bus, it costs money.
If you have a bus in northern Wisconsin,
right.
Do you have to pay paratransit, which we've heard could cost $40 or $50 if for people with disabilities in some remote parts of Wisconsin? Again, people for whom this is going to be a problem. And we don't believe that the rights of these people to vote, that Wisconsin, the state of Wisconsin, should be taking away these people's right to vote. But that's what this voter ID law is doing.
I noticed that you also had in among the plaintiffs students from Lawrence University and from Carthage, and you also mentioned technical colleges. Can you take that on? Why are they plaintiffs?
Sure. So there are about 400,000 tech college students in the state of Wisconsin. These are accredited colleges, and in fact, the Government Accountability Board's position now is that those tech college IDs should be valid for voting. That's a lot of people, and I again note that tech colleges have more students of color than even the UW system does. There is a debate right now going on where the legislature appears to be, or legislative committee, trying to quash the use of tech college IDs. We have students who only have tech college IDs, and we think it's unreasonable when tech colleges meet the definitions set out in state law for accredited institutions that there appears to be an effort to block the use of those tech college IDs. So, and again, we're talking about 400,000 students. Now, do some of them, do many of them maybe have other forms of ID? Sure. Do all of them? Absolutely not. In terms of the other college students, some of the I know in a lot of the UW system campuses now are going to be issuing some kind of voting card for students who can't get other forms of ID to vote, because regular UW system IDs are also not valid under the voting law, even though these are like secure IDs that are used as bank accounts, WIS cards, things like that. Not all schools are doing it. Not all private colleges are doing it. So, but to vote, you have to have an in-state Wisconsin ID. You do have out-of-state students. They don't have cars here. They don't necessarily drive here. They live most of their lives here, and they're Wisconsin residents legally for voting purposes. But they may have an out-of-state ID so that they can stay on their parents' car insurance, or so that they can drive if they're home over Christmas break or something like that. We consider it a poll tax because in order – if their college isn't issuing a compliant ID, if they don't have passports, then in order to get a Wisconsin state ID card, which would be valid for voting, they have to surrender the out-of-state driver's license. You cannot have an out-of-state driver's license and ID card and also get a Wisconsin state ID card that would be valid for voting. The state of Wisconsin prohibits that. So – they're forced into a choice. They can give up their driver's licenses and thus give up driving privileges in order to get a Wisconsin ID card. They can pay for a Wisconsin driver's license, and the burden may be not just the cost of the license, but if there are insurance-related issues with their families and things like that. Or they can give up driving privileges, they can give up voting privileges, or they can pay.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't think that's a reasonable choice, and we think that that is also ends up being a poll tax. There may be people other than students, you know, who have out-of-state licenses and occasionally drive here, but it's students for whom it's the most obvious and probably greatest number of them having this problem.
We have a full bank of phone lines. We'll take our phone calls in a moment. Just one more question from me before we go to the phones, in maybe two parts of this. The other side, of course, and we've heard from people on the other side, and we'll do another show on this, says that this is the only way to make sure that there's no voter fraud. We have to make sure that we have a pure system here. There have been cases of voter fraud, they'll say, particularly in certain states, and this just makes certain that for this very sacred, important responsibility, everything is on the up and up.
I would say that as far as I know in Wisconsin, there has been no proven case, no evidence of any case of voter fraud that photo ID would fix. Have there been some cases where people maybe who were still on probation or parole voted and shouldn't have? Yes. People who are in the community can have IDs. So this law would not have fixed that, for example. There are a couple other examples, none of which involve, as far as I know, not only in Wisconsin, but off the top of my head, I think nationally there have been either none or virtually none cases of voter impersonation fraud. Every now and then you hear, well, I went to vote and my name had been checked off on the list. And investigation after investigation shows you have John Smith Sr. and John Smith Jr. and somehow, you know, the name gets checked off incorrectly. Or you have you know, two neighbors living next door to each other and the addresses get mixed up and someone checks it off. There has been no fraud. And remember, they're also going to require people to sign the poll books now. So if there's that, you know, issue, it should be taken care of. I think it's pretty clear that a lot more people are going to be disfranchised and lose their right to vote as a result of this law and lose that sacred right to vote than there ever have been found to have committed any kind of fraud that people are screaming about. I think we may have close to as many named plaintiffs in this case who are at risk of losing their right to vote as have ever been convicted in the state of Wisconsin of voter fraud. It's certainly in the ballpark. And that's just the named plaintiffs, not the class of people they represent, which is presumably thousands of people.
We take phone calls momentarily. Karen Rotger is our guest, senior staff attorney of the ACLU of Wisconsin. In case you missed the news, the ACLU of Wisconsin and the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty filed a federal lawsuit. It's the first federal lawsuit charging that Wisconsin voter ID law is unconstitutional and will deprive citizens of their basic right to vote. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll start with an email because this will be applicable to other people. It's from Karen. My mother-in-law is 94 years old and homebound due to health reasons. We recently moved her in with my sister-in-law, so she has had a change of address. How can she get a photo ID and absentee ballot?
Okay, so I do want to say, while there are not a lot of people exempt from the law, I want to give hopefully a little comfort to Karen and some of these folks. If people get when you look at the absentee ballot application, there are a couple of choices you can check for absentee ballot, and one is called a permanent absentee. And by checking that, you say, I want a permanent absentee ballot because I am indefinitely confined due to age, disability, or a couple other things like that. If you are a permanent absentee, then you are exempt from the photo ID law. You just get the witness signature on your absentee ballot, but you don't have to show photo ID. But again, it has to be permanent absentee because you're indefinitely confined. I'm obviously not a medical professional. It sounds like this woman might be indefinitely confined. She would need to re-register to vote, which is something you can do by mail or by voter registrar if you can't get down to the clerk's office and do it in person. But if this 94-year-old woman is not indefinitely confined, or for other elderly people who are not indefinitely confined and who are not going to certify that they're indefinitely confined, they've got to get to a DMV with the documents, same as everybody else.
And if you're voting absentee and you have to do photo ID, you go to a Xerox place and Xerox a picture, and isn't there a problem that you could use somebody else's picture?
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, the as I said, you're a permanent absentee, you don't need ID.
Right.
And also, let me just quickly say that people in certain care facilities, like nursing homes and certain group homes, there are some exemptions for those folks. But just someone living in their house, voting absentee maybe at this election, even though they don't vote absentee at all elections, you get yourself to a copy shop and you copy your photo ID and you include it. I mean, I didn't write the law. I'm just explaining what
it
says.
Oh, I know you didn't write the law. Far from it. Yeah. Let's go to Bill from Madison. Hi, Bill.
Hello. I have an observation and a comment. One, when I go to a merchant and I want to write a check and they ask me to see my ID, I generally chafe at it. I don't like to do it. So I have the option, of course, of paying cash or taking my business elsewhere. I bitterly resent having exercise my constitutional right to vote conditional on my willingness to do something that I wouldn't do for a lot of, you know, merchants. Because I'm captive. I have no options. I can't go elsewhere to vote. Two other observations. One, voter fraud has been shown, at least in this state, that we have much more to fear from voter fraud from the actual poll workers asking to see my ID than they do from me. Irregularities in Waukesha County alone will still never be, probably will never be totally resolved. But there's been a lot of funny business, and it's usually on the side of the people running the election, not the voters.
Well, you know, I agree with you that we don't think the right to vote should be conditioned on showing ID. Unfortunately, that is the law that passed. Let me say, we actually do have some concerns. And if this happens to people in practice, we'd be interested in talking to them, because there are a couple of ways that there could be discretion improperly exercised by poll workers. This isn't part of the lawsuit because it hasn't occurred yet, but it is a concern. One is, they have to look at the picture and decide if it reasonably resembles the voter. Now, you know, hopefully that I think the GAB is setting pretty strict standards, but, you know, there are a lot of poll workers out there, and who knows how that's going to play out. And second, it's whether the name on the ID substantially conforms to the name on the voting sheet. So I think people are being told if it's James or Jimmy, the vote, you know, if one says James and one says Jimmy, the voter should be allowed to vote. But, you know, there are gray areas where, again, we have some concerns that if the name isn't close enough, there could be some, you know, discretion improperly exercised by poll workers in ways that could end up costing people the right to vote.
What are the specific violations of the Constitution?
Well, first of all, there's what's called the equal protection violation, which is on the right to vote. We believe that for the classes of people who are having trouble getting ID and the other classes of people we're talking about, that it is an undue burden on exercising that right to vote. So that's part of the constitutional burden. Then there's also the poll tax argument for people who are going to have to pay for documents or otherwise pay money to exercise the right to vote. Even if the ID is free, there's that underlying issue we've talked about. And those are the two primary constitutional provisions we're talking about. And then there's also sort of equal protection, arbitrary and unreasonable. That would be, say, the technical college IDs. Or one of my other favorites, we have a client who's a homeless veteran. He has a VA photo ID, U.S. federal government issued photo ID. Those are not valid for voting.
Not allowed.
So our veterans cannot use their VA IDs as photo ID for voting. We think that's pretty arbitrary and unreasonable, too.
Emmanuel in Pewaukee. Hi.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this is yet another example of anti-immigrant legislation that's unfortunately adversely affecting American citizens at this point. And the purpose of a driver's license has been perverted from certifying a skill to deciding who each person is and whether they should be here, whether they could vote, and so on and so forth. I think it's pretty perverse that a veteran cannot vote pursuant to a military ID. I think that's pretty perverse that that's not acceptable to the state of Wisconsin. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much for the call. What is the process here? How rapidly is this going to happen? Tell me legally what's going to happen.
The law. I mean, we have filed the complaint itself. We're going to get the state served. We have to then we'll be proceeding with both, presumably asking for some interim relief sooner rather than later, hopefully from the federal court, and also asking for this to be you have to go through a process to get it certified as a class action so that it's not just for the 18 or 19 voters we sued on behalf of, but that they're standing in the shoes of all the hundreds and thousands of other people in the state. I just want to say something quickly about Emmanuel's point, where he said military ID, active duty uniform services ID, that's okay for voting. It's the veterans who are out of luck.
It's very confusing. I suspect there are going to be a number of people showing up at the polls, and they won't be able to vote because they don't know exactly what it is they need here.
I think people will show up at the polls, and I also think people will decide they're not eligible to vote and be turned away. There's the GAB, which, again, I understand they're trying to share information, but their little booklet compendium of all the rules on voter ID is 60 pages long. We've had multiple people with law degrees reading through it to try to figure out all the rules. If you have a ninth grade education or a limited English profession, it is going to be hard. I would like to also just throw out, in the interest not of the lawsuit but of sharing information that's important, your ID, your license or ID does not have to have your current address to be valid for voting. And I do want, because there's a lot of confusion about that. The picture has to look like you. It's got to have the correct name or a conforming name. But if you've moved since then, you don't have to run and get a new driver's license. The GAB has said that explicitly.
We'll take another call for you. Jeff is next. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning, and I want to thank your guests for fighting the good fight. This is just very disturbing, and this is the kind of thing that's motivating people to get involved. And it's clear in the Constitution that any voter ID law, apart from being repugnant, is unconstitutional. The perplexing thing is the Republicans want to restrict voters. They want less voters, and the Democrats want more. So it should be obvious to most people that one side's policies are so poisonous that they need to try to trick the system to keep people from voting them out. What can I do about it? Well, I'm running a recall Walker drive-thru on the shores of Shawamigan Bay this weekend. What can you do? Stop in and sign the petition. Thank you.
Karen.
Hi. I just want to say quickly, I appreciate all the calls coming in. We are completely nonpartisan. And I want to be clear to folks, we have not asked, I have no idea how any of my clients would vote or any affiliation. We are doing this because we believe in protecting the constitutional right to vote, whoever you might be voting for and whatever your background is and whatever your party affiliation or lack of party affiliation is. And I think that's important for us to be sharing.
Yeah. Thanks very much for the call. One more phone call from you because I can't bypass Hugh. Hi, Hugh from Milwaukee.
Hi. This week on the local television in Milwaukee, they interviewed someone whose hatred of Governor Walker and the Republicans is so intense that he has signed about 80 petitions of recall of Walker. Democrats, in their righteousness and their hatred of the Republicans, are notorious for doing anything to prevent fair elections. And this, for example, in 2004, Nader, where there was an attempt to get Nader on the ballot, there were petitions and so forth, and the Democratic Party of Wisconsin went to court several times to prevent those petitions, and they even.
But Hugh, what we're talking about is photo ID.
Photo ID. You can have IDs are required in South Africa. IDs are required in India. Blacks and whites, people of all color, are required. Even the Jimmy Carter crowd that monitors elections in Russia and all over the world sees nothing wrong with these kind of IDs.
Photo IDs all over the world.
Well, you know, that may or may not be true. And maybe it would be different if the DMV or the state of Wisconsin assigned caseworkers to sit down with all the people who don't have IDs and help them gather the documents they need to get IDs and help them pay for the documents they need to get IDs. But instead, what we're doing is plunging, again, we believe many thousands of people, into an abyss and saying, you know what, you show up at DMV, you don't have the documents, you're on your own, come back when you get it together. And if you don't, we, the state of Wisconsin, are going to take away your right to vote. And again, ACLU, National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty, we don't care who you're voting for. We are not affiliated with any party, but we do believe that the right to vote is sacred. It's our constitutional right, and we want to protect that.
For people to get more information, do you have websites? Do you recommend a website on how to go read through all this?
So a couple of things. There's our ACLU of Wisconsin website, www.aclu-wi.org. It may be on the homepage. It may not. I'm not the tech expert. But on the left side, there's an issues button. You can click on that and go to voting rights. There's information there. And I particularly want to put in a shout out. If you or someone you are close to has actually had problems getting the ID, not just sort of rumors or third-hand stories, but an actual person who has run into a problem, if you go to that issues voting rights page, there is an affected individual questionnaire on there. We're asking that you complete that and get in touch with us. We are, you know, we know there are other people out there. If this is happening to you, please let us know. We would like to talk to you.
Thank you so much for being with us, Karen.
Thank you.
Karen Locker, senior staff attorney at the ACLU of Wisconsin. In case you're just tuning us in, yesterday the ACLU of Wisconsin, the American Civil Liberties Union, and the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty filed a federal lawsuit charging that Wisconsin's voter ID law is unconstitutional and will deprive citizens of their basic right to vote. This is the only active federal challenge against a voter ID law And we are going to continue our conversation and get a historical perspective on this with Donald Downs. He is a professor of law and journalism at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and we'll still be welcoming your phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Professor Donald Downs, thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning.
This is the first federal lawsuit. Do you imagine there are going to be more, that 30 states that have enacted some kind of new voter ID, voter requirements, will also be challenged?
It's very likely that it'll happen. a few years ago, the Supreme Court upheld the voter ID law in Indiana, so that might be a deterrent to some people coming forward on this, some states coming forward on this. But that case dealt with a facial challenge, meaning they looked at the law as it was sitting on the paper and didn't get into how it was applied as much. So there's still kind of an opening there. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm. And what happens with, I read somewhere, and I can't remember what the Eric Holder has said about all of this. He evidently is looking at the Attorney General at voting laws throughout the country. Where is the movement on that? What's happening with that?
Well, you're starting to see more interest in it, and I think the what's happening here with the ACLU in Wisconsin sort of taking a lead on it. Things are so polarized in our political system. It's interesting, going back to the Indiana case, it was a completely partisan kind of vote. The Republican Party unanimously supported the voter ID in Indiana, and the Democratic Party unanimously opposed it. But the Supreme Court still upheld it because it said independent of the partisanship, there were objective concerns that the state had in mind that the court said were constitutionally valid as far as they looked into that particular case. So there's a lot of interest in it, and groups are starting to organize around the country, and we'll see what will happen.
Right. Karen spent quite a bit of time talking about the financial burden that will keep a lot of people from registering here, because you got to take a bus if you don't have much money, you don't have a car, it costs money to get a birth certificate, a copy of that, and some people don't even have those because they were born at home or it got lost or something, so it may be very expensive. What about the idea that there could be, it could be considered a poll tax in Wisconsin to get this idea?
Right. Well, it has that effect. Going back to the Indiana case, and I keep mentioning it because it is a very core case here, the court dismissed the argument, 6-3 vote, that it was a poll tax, because a poll tax was put in place back in the 60s directly to keep basically African-Americans from voting. There was no rational basis for it other than that. And in the Indiana case, the court said there were concerns about voter fraud. They hadn't found anything really in Indiana, but they said it had happened around the country. So there was an independently objective reason for the state to be concerned about voter fraud. And the effect of that photo ID law there could have been to keep some people from voting, but that wasn't the intent. Mm. So if it's not the intent, then it's not a poll tax. But certainly the effect could be the same. And Karen made a lot of good points about some of the burdens that are entailed here. Mm. So what the court will do, so the first point is there an intent to keep voters out? And if that's not the case, then you look to see whether the burden is undue, independent of any intent. And so the question here in Wisconsin will be whether or not this burden is undue. The court will allow some burden on the right to vote in the name of sort of balancing that with the state's compelling interest in the integrity of elections. So the question is really going to be whether or not, it's not whether or not there's a burden here, but whether that burden is undue.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about this rational basis saying that trying to counteract a voter fraud is the rationality behind this? I've been hearing from a lot of people that voter fraud just really isn't rampant. So how can there be a rational basis for completely changing voting based on something that is not a huge problem? Or maybe
it
is.
Right. Well, that's something the court will have to look at. Apparently in Wisconsin, there haven't been that many cases of voter fraud at the polls. I was listening to the earlier part of the show with Karen, and the problem seems to be more in referenda initiatives and things like that, getting out the recall kind of election issue. When it comes to actually coming to a poll and voting, there are very few cases that have been found. Now, the claim on the other side is that, well, it's hard to find that kind of fraud. And so people imagine that it's greater than we've actually been able to document. But, you know, that's how does one prove that one way or the other?
And what about this partisan nature of all of this? You're a professor of law and a professor of political science. Why is this so highly partisan?
There's a broader reason is that our politics in general has become more polarized. And but more specifically, it's pretty clear to me that the people that would be kept out of voting from this are people that would be more inclined to vote for the Democratic Party. And Democrats know that, Republicans know that. And going back to the Indiana case where it was a completely partisan vote, that knowledge is pretty well established. So there's a lot at stake. And, you know, going back to 2000, the election over the president, and what happened in Florida, that was a really close vote. It came down to a few hundred votes that decided who was going to be the president of the United States. And look at all the policies that came down after Bush was elected. It was a huge impact.
Right.
So there's a lot at stake, and this really does have a disparate impact on the different parties. So that's why it's so intense.
Mm-hmm. And when do you think all of this is going to be decided?
Well, it depends on how quickly the federal courts get to it. And, would the Supreme Court have an expedited review on it to try to get to the case more quickly because of the elections coming up? But my guess is none of this will get decided until after... it might get decided before the 2012 elections, maybe not. I don't know.
They wouldn't put a lot of stars on it and say this has got to be done soon?
They might.
Mm-hmm.
But that's at their discretion.
Let's go to phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number, and Professor Donald Downs from UW-Madison is our guest. This part of the program, we're looking at the lawsuit that was filed against the governor and a number of public officials in the state of Wisconsin by the ACLU, and it's the first federal lawsuit in the country that is taking on the voter ID bill, and we're welcoming phone calls. Let's go to Ron in Sparta. Hi, Ron.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm not happy with the voter ID law either, and the reason being is my mother, who is 90, a lifetime resident of Wisconsin, but never has had a driver's license, and for that reason, she's not going to the DMV to get an ID. She's just not going to do it, and other disabled people, so I'm not happy with it. I'm an independent, but I can see the justification because of the non-enforcement of illegal immigration in the state of Wisconsin. It costs our state $883 million a year. We're in the top 10 as far as cost in the whole United States of our state on illegal immigration. And I can see where illegals, just by having a tech ed ID, can vote. And we pay for their education, so that's part of our cost, and that's wrong. And until that law is enforced, we have to have other laws to cover bases, I guess.
Professor Downs.
Yeah, well, that certainly is an issue, but the question here is whether or not all these provisions constitute an undue burden. And for some individuals, it's quite clear it's going to be either very hard for them to get that, the photo ID, especially if they don't have much money, and whether or not they're going to be able to vote is really open to question. So the question is whether or not it's an undue burden.
Is this an issue that's driving a lot of this legislation, this concern that illegal immigrants are voting?
I would think so.
Are they? I mean, is there any proof of that?
I've seen no proof of that.
Yeah. James in Milwaukee, is voting a federal right in the Constitution, or is it based on the power of the state to determine who can vote?
Right. Well, it's a federal constitutional right coming out of the 15th Amendment and the 14th Amendment. And but the states have control over how the voting process works. And so you have kind of this balance between the federal constitutional right, which is you can adjudicate in a federal court, but voting is done by the states. States control how the process works.
We have 50 million emails. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but let's get to some of these. We have a lot of them. What are the penalties for any poll worker who lets someone vote without following the ID law, i.e. my neighbor comes to vote and forgot his ID, so I let him vote because I've known him for years?
Right, right. Well, there really haven't been any sanctions applied that I know of. You're told not to do it again. You might lose your job. I don't know of any kind of criminal sanctions that have been exercised in a case like that. And I was listening to the show earlier. Karen's right that a lot of times when they look to see what really happened when someone's voted whose name wasn't on the list, or someone's name's been checked off when the other person comes to the poll, and usually it is a mistake by the people at the polls.
Mm. And here's one from Rick in Milwaukee. Is it true that those with a gun permit can use that for the voter ID? If so, does it have a picture, and why would this be acceptable before a tech school ID?
Right. According to the materials I've looked at, what would qualify as a proper ID to get the photo ID, a gun permit would not be on that list.
Gregory near Madison, hi.
Yeah, hello. Just two questions or comments. How do law enforcement individuals handle people without identification? And, you know, like, isn't it mostly that the elderly, the older people are going to have problems with this identification process? Maybe give them a break or something? And that's all.
All right. Thanks, Gregory.
Yeah, to answer the second question first, yes, of course, elderly people, depending on their circumstance, are probably going to be among the those most affected by this, just because of the difficulty of getting places and things like that. I mean, how do police handle people's IDs? Well, it'll depend on whether or not they have a basis for detaining them or holding them, and then they can question them and try to pursue, you know, who they are, et cetera. But that's a case-by-case issue.
Regina is next in Maquoneco. Hi, Regina.
Hi. I am really dismayed by what's happened with this voter ID business, because I've got four children who have just been moving from place to place and sleeping on couches because they haven't found work, except as real sporadic. A couple of them do not have driver's licenses, and if you're walking, a lot of the DMVs aren't even on bus lines. They're out on freeways and places that you can only drive to, so it's near impossible for them to afford it or get to these places to get ID. And my suggestion for everybody in the state of Wisconsin, because this has become so onerous, is, hold on for just a second, please, has become so onerous that that everybody in the state should go back and talk, I'll be right with you, should go out and get a voter ID. Every single person, whether you've got a driver's license or not, should all go get one and see how difficult that is to manage. And then everybody should show up at their polling place, whether they've got the proper ID or not. People understand how many people this actually is.
Professor Downs.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good point. And it is sort of unknown right now how many people this will affect. And I think both sides extrapolate in their own different directions. So we need more concrete evidence of how many people will be affected, and therefore we can determine whether or not it's an undue burden.
You can almost expect it'll be a given that it's going to be a bit of a mess.
Right.
It really, can't you? Long lines and confusion.
Right. And part of the mess is that the Government Accountability Board is still trying to figure out the regulations on some of these things. And part of the ACLU suit is based on the problem with the technical school
right.
IDs, which they're trying to work out. And we're getting, you know, tentative rulings, but we're not really sure what's going to happen there. And it's very costly for schools to change how they make these IDs, and they're not going to incur that cost until they really know what the situation is.
Yeah.
So we're in kind of limbo right now.
More phone calls momentarily. Our number is 800-486-8655. This hour we're talking about the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU of Wisconsin, and the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty filing a federal lawsuit yesterday charging that Wisconsin's voter ID law is unconstitutional and will deprive citizens of their basic right to vote. This part of the program analyzing the legal ramifications of this, Professor Donald Downs, Professor of Law, Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin. Madison, author of a number of prize-winning books, including Nazis in Skokie, Freedom Community and the First Amendment, The New Politics of Pornography, Arms in the University, Military Presence and the Civic Education on Non-Military Students, that is forthcoming, I believe, and Restoring Free Speech and Liberty on Campus. We have just been jammed with phone calls and emails. Here, a line is open now. 800-486-8655 is our number. We also want to thank you, those who contributed to Wisconsin Public Radio during our one-day Tuesday year-end pledge drive. We had nearly 2,500 members pledge, and we're very pleased to welcome more than 500 new members to the Wisconsin Public Radio Association. You donated over $190,000 to help the networks of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we thank you very much. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our next call is Ellen in Milwaukee. Hi, Ellen.
Hi.
Hi.
I just have a question about this thing. It's Wisconsin ID, i.e. driver's license, is good for 8 years. And from what I'm hearing is that the university ID has to have a 2-year validity on it. It has to be within 2 years that it's... I just don't understand why it would have to have such a short... You know, the university has students that sometimes go on for...
7 years, 8 years, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, Professor Downs.
Yeah, well, it's fairly tailored to the average span of an undergraduate, which is 4 years. And so it has a more limited date on it than a regular driver's license. It's a different kind of institutional setting.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ellen. Here's another question about students from Christian. Not only students from neighboring states, but Wisconsin students may not have a driver's license. My students are completely clueless about it and just shrug their shoulders about the process, particularly Illinois or Indiana residents who won't go to the trouble. That was the reaction of my straight-A student.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And you know, 2008 election, students voted in greater numbers than previously. And but political science research has shown consistently that the youth vote tends to be less extensive percentage-wise than that of people that are older.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was presumably a hurdle would have a bigger impact on a younger voter than it would on an older voter because there's less general incentive to vote.
Hans in Shorewood, hi.
Hi, good morning. Glad to take my call. You know, I was listening, and the professor is saying that the federal courts are saying if it would be justified if it's undue. Well, to me, it does sound undue because they're making it so confusing for people to actually get out. They don't know what to do. And to me, that would be undue justice.
Yeah, it certainly would, that would be evidence pointing in that direction.
Hmm.
So, and like I mentioned briefly before, the previous Supreme Court decision on this in Indiana, they didn't really get into the actual effect of this because they were dealing with what's called a facial challenge, just looking at the law. Is it constitutional? On its face, does the state have independently objective reasons for supporting this? In this case, they're going to get down into the facts a little bit more. And so there's a better chance they'll find an undue burden, if indeed there is one.
Do you know who brought the Indiana challenge? Was it the ACLU?
No, it was, I don't remember offhand. But it was the name of some of the plaintiffs in the case. So
mm-hmm.
individuals that claimed that they would be deterred by it.
We go to,
wasn't an organization.
I see. Okay, Tim on the road. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Tim.
Yes. I have a question for Professor Downs. The basis of the ACLU suit seems to be that it's unconstitutional. You referred to the 14th and 15th Amendment of the Constitution. I'm wondering if the language there suggests that citizens are allowed to vote or that anyone who presents themselves to the poll is allowed to vote.
Right.
Because
right.
if it says citizens, then what should be the mechanism for ensuring that a person is indeed a citizen?
Yeah, there has to be some. Yeah, you're not allowed to vote if you're not a citizen. And so there has to be some way of validating that, whatever the state comes up with. But yes, it has to be a citizen. If you're not a citizen, you're not voting.
Thanks, Jim, for
yeah, but the 14th Amendment's broader provisions deal with persons, not citizens. And I mentioned the 14th Amendment because the 14th Amendment is in the Equal Protection Clause states that no state shall deprive any person of equal protection of the law. And if you have a right to vote and you're being deprived of that because of unfair reasons, then that would deprive you of your equal protection. So the Equal Protection Clause would cover citizens who want to vote, but it would not cover non-citizens in this particular case.
It's such a change, isn't it, Professor Downs, for the state of Wisconsin, because it used to be pretty easy to vote here.
Right, right. Yep, and you didn't have to show anything. And I'll confess, you know, I would show up, and it would alarm me somewhat to see that I didn't have to prove who I was. But then again, there hasn't been a great deal of evidence that there's widespread voter fraud in the state of Wisconsin. Now, there has been elsewhere. And it's interesting, the author of the Indiana case was Justice Stevens from Chicago. And he had been involved in a lot of Chicago politics before he got into law. And he had seen what voter fraud really is down there.
Yeah, I grew up there. I know that, too. Thanks, Professor Downs, very much for being with us. Professor Donald Downs, our guest, the second part of the hour. And we also thank our guest from the ACLU, who's an attorney working on this, Karen Rotker, senior staff attorney. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing this hour, and thanks to Chrissy as well for on-air production in our downtown Milwaukee studios.